It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 450. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. I have 6 voicemails for tonight's show. A long show lined up with lots of great content. 6 voicemails. We're going to get to them all. And then I have some email. Oh, I just got so much. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And don't forget, we have the wiki, which is at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows, which will link the audio and the show notes. Great resource. I have such a jam-packed show tonight with some things I want to talk about, consulting stories, which involve some migrations that I've done, and some tips on IE10 that is being shoved down everybody's throat from Microsoft, a couple issues I've had with clients, and how we're working around them. Tremendous email. And I have tremendous feedback with some of the audio, including Google Reader being abandoned by Google. What are the alternatives? So that's just a little tip. We're going to get into antivirus discussion. Stay tuned. Just a tremendous show lined up. So let's take care of business. You want your websites to load quicker, and you want to make sure that if your DNS provider goes down, you have a secondary route to your website. That is where dyn.com, dyn.com comes in. With outsourced DNS, you can make sure people can get to your website at all times. With managed DNS, you can even connect items like your webcams or a DVR to a private channel that you can pull from at any time. Dyn has service tiers for companies of any size to get started. Dyn serves more than 4 million customers around the world. Stop taking chances with your uptime right now and start talking to Dyn about their best-in-class managed DNS. To get faster internet by using DYN for DNS, visit dyn.com/podcast30. Fill out the contact form or start shopping right away and save 30% by using the promo code podcast30 at checkout. So again, visit dyn.com/podcast30. First on the agenda, I have a client with Small Business Server 2003, and Microsoft is now pushing IE10 as a critical automatic download to everybody. And so this client that has 11 users, and a lot of them are remote, and they live on Outlook Web Access, OWA, to get their email. Now, that's the web interface for Exchange that's being hosted by Small Business Server 2003. Well, wouldn't you know it, IE10 is not compatible with OWA. So we have to work around this problem. And we had two things we could try. One, there is an Internet Explorer 10 blocker toolkit. You're able to have this toolkit, which helps you push a block to IE10 being installed. That gets complicated because now we got to test, and should we stop this upgrade or allow it and work around it? So we decided to allow the workaround, and this is what they had to do. After IE10 was installed, you press F12 in the browser to open the developer tools. And in the browser mode, IE 10 menu, you select Internet Explorer 9. And this will make the OWA believe that it's being viewed in IE 9. So we have to fake it out. And that was the easiest way to make this problem go away. That's you hit F12, and for browser mode, you select Internet Explorer 9. And that solved the problem. Next, AOL. And I need to thank Kate for arming me with some links. And by the way, I'm going to have the links to those two IE 10 solutions. Well, I have an elderly lady who lives in AOL and was getting a new computer. And I was worried about doing a migration because I don't use AOL. But she has a lot of clients where she's ran into this, where she's had to migrate AOL from one machine to a newer computer. So she sent me two links, which are going to be in the show notes. One, make sure you download and have ready the newest version to install on the new computer. So I had that ready on my USB stick. The next one, I printed the instructions on transferring the personal filing cabinet from one computer to another. So I made sure that I had all of these folders properly copied from the existing system, from that new system, and I was ready to restore them. But I was very fortunate. Kate mentioned this in her email to me, that it's possible that everything is saved up in AOL land. And it was. So, well, the first thing before I started to restore any AOL content, I installed the new client, which was desktop 9.7, and I had my client log in. And once she logged in, oh, it was great. She had everything. All of her favorites were there. Her email was there. I did not have to copy anything. So I was fortunate that she lived in the AOL cloud, and nothing, even though I copied all those folders and only took a minute, they were pretty small. It was pretty small because nothing's being saved locally. So everything was out there. But I was ready just in case. So I made sure that I had all the right directories copied, and I knew I had nothing to worry about. So again, thank you, Kate, for arming me. And it's always better to be prepared for the worst and then have the best happen. So that was great. Let's start with voicemail one.
Hi, Mike. First of all, I want to say thanks for the shows. You do a great job there out of Philadelphia. I'm in Pittsburgh here, and I also do some podcasting and some vidcasting with Jack's Tech Corner, so I do appreciate all your input. Hey, I wanted to call, this is in reference to a caller that you talked about in show number 447, and you were talking about the N computer systems, and I believe the caller wanted to set up an N computer. He wanted to sell one workstation with multiple boxes, and that would be the X series N computer system. When you do this, I work for a school district, and we have these throughout the whole district, so I'm pretty fluent with these end computer boxes. When you do this, you're sharing one desktop off of the server, and you're just allowing multiple logins. That user cannot install software, and they cannot change the configuration of that unit, because you, as the administrator, have full access to that server, to that box, the workstation, and you control that actual workstation. Now, if the caller wanted to use the L series will run off of Windows Server 2008. It has to be 32-bit, but it will run off of there. Again, you'll have more clients because you can connect more than five or six users as you can on the X series, because the server, naturally, as you know, can handle more concurrent connections. And the N computer box, just as a side note, is very, very dependent on RAM memory. Once again, Mike, I hope this helps you out. I hope this helps your caller out. Again, thanks for the great work you do. I do listen to your shows and enjoy them very much. And once again, this is Jack, and my shows can be found at jackstechcorner.com. Thanks, Mike. Talk to you some other time. Maybe we'll hook up here and do some kind of a phone interview with you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jack. That's great advice. And I am not familiar with the end computing when I was trying to respond to that, so I'm really glad in your feedback. Our next voicemail is also about end computing, and I will have a link to Jack's Tech Corner. Jack, thank you. Here's the next voicemail.
Hey, Mike. This is Paul with Little Dog Tech Computer Repair in West Des Moines, Iowa. Anyway, I just got done listening to a show from February 21st, I think it was. Maybe a little late to the party, but one person asked about end computing and how it works. And, well, I rolled out a 30-unit computer lab for a school that I work for and just wanted to say it doesn't create separate operating systems. It's basically like a terminal server. It runs on RDP, their own proprietary protocol, and essentially you are sharing the same desktop. You can sign in with different users and such, or you can sign in with the same user, in my experience. Either way, you're all sharing the same operating system. If you wanted to virtualize, the point for that would be to have separate instances of Windows, maybe, for different types of users. In my case, I got 30 students all sharing one big beefy terminal server, and it's working great for about a year at this point. You install updates, you do it once. So, just wanted to pass that along. LittleDogTech.com is my website. If anyone's got any questions, you can feel free to drop me a line there. LittleDogTech.com. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you very much. That is great. And it looks like this is an alternative to terminal server, which I understand terminal servers. One of the things that the first voicemail, what Jack mentioned, you're going to have that many concurrent sessions. You got to have lots of RAM. So if you're going to embrace end computing, you must, or terminal services or even Citrix, anything like that, where you're hosting lots of desktops, RAM, you got to just load up and max out your system. That's very important. So this way you have enough sliced out for each of those sessions. Great feedback, everybody. Thank you. This voicemail is about an Exchange issue with Excel that gonna need your help.
Hi, Mike. This is Kevin with the Computer Doctor in Richmond, Virginia. I've got an issue that I'd like to run past you and your listeners. I've got a client, a relatively new client, that's got an SBS 2008 server on site, and Exchange is being hosted on this device. They recently started having issues with email inbound to them. And the pattern is that when the email has an attachment, and that attachments are not too large, the attachments in this case are almost always Excel spreadsheets, and they are well under a 10 megabyte limit, oftentimes maybe a meg or two. And typically happens when there's multiple Excel spreadsheets. But if the attachments are other forms, such as PDFs or Word documents, it doesn't seem to happen. And what's going on here is when a user tries to send my customer an email with these Excel spreadsheets, it gets delayed. However, there's one additional wrinkle. It seems to be when they are being sent from a Google-hosted account, whether it's Gmail or Google Business Apps. Other customers that are sending my customer an email, if they aren't on Google Business Apps or Gmail, they seem to be going through just fine. I did a quick site check for blacklists, and they aren't on any blacklists. However, I do know that Google typically has their own blacklist, and I have not been able to check with that because I understand it's rather convoluted to find out if you're on a Google blacklist. Just want to run that past you, see if you had any ideas of what I could check, and thank you. I hope you have a great time on your extended weekend vacation that you're going on, and I'm always listening.
Hey, thanks. I have an idea. What I would like you to try is from a Google-hosted email account, take that Excel spreadsheet and rename it. Could it be just the XLS or XLSX? the extension being blocked by Google or being filtered out? Does the email get through and just not the attachment? Or is it if the attachment's being blocked? I'm wondering, maybe it's just that extension. Make sure that all your settings all the way through that you're allowing XLS, which I'm sure you have. And since you're sending from another email account that's not Google hosted and it gets through, it's the only thing I can think of. For some reason, Google is blocking that XLS extension, which doesn't make sense. I understand EXE, and I know some zip files I've tried to send and I couldn't. And what I've had to do is rename the file to be .txt. And then in the message, I tell the recipient to just rename it to be .zip and then unarchive the attachment. And it's went through and that has worked. Give that a try, just a test. And if anybody else has any ideas here, boy, we would love to hear them. And I will share it with the listener. So thank you very much for that. This is a very good idea from Patrick, and I am going to take him up on this, and I'm going to do it during this show.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Patrick Boyle, Springfield, Missouri. You know, I've been listening to your show since the beginning, and I just heard the most recent show, well, actually last week's, because this week's was early, and it just occurs to me that if you're going to do branding, that you should get specific. That is, when you talk about your Amazon links, you always give out two links. Well, I know they both work, and personally, I've had it bookmarked for a long time, so it doesn't matter to me. But some of the people who don't have it bookmarked, well, yeah, okay, they can go to your website and pick it up there. But if they're just going to go from listening to you, well, they're like me, driving down the road, and they hear it. And then was that MikeTechShow.com/Amazon or MikeNation.net/Amazon or Amazon.MikeTechShow.com? I mean, you know, why have two of them? Just pick one and go with it. And then you can focus on that and not have to confuse the issue by giving out two of them every time. So that's my suggestion. Your business, of course, do whatever you wish. And in any case, thanks for the show. See you, Mike.
Patrick, you are absolutely right. And from this moment on, even though both links work and will take you to Amazon, I am using amazon.mikenation.net. That is the link. And please use that and continue to use that for all your Amazon purchases. That is the only link I will mention, and I will make sure to brand it that way. And I want to thank everybody for your continued support and using my Amazon link, because that really helps. It makes a difference, and it makes a big impact in supporting the show. And that's amazon.mikenation.net. Thank you. All right. Voicemail 5. This is from Brian from the UK, and he is absolutely voicing a lot of your opinion here because of Google's announcement.
Hi, Mike. This is Brian Goddard from the UK. This is all about Google Reader. I'm a little bit annoyed and a bit frustrated the fact that it's going away on the 1st of July. It's like with a lot of things. When you invest a lot of time in something, it's been a number of years, 6 or 7 years I've been using the product. If they do take it away, I'm going to have to find an alternative. So I suppose it's not really a complaint, it's more of a plea. I don't know if you and the listeners, we can all get together and try and find a very good alternative that we can use on an Android phone. I used to actually use Google Reader to actually play podcasts as well. It was not only my library, but I used it as a player. Yes, I know there's good products like Dogcatcher, which I've gone out and purchased in a panic, and I've also downloaded my data from the takeaway, But if it is going to go away, we need a good alternative. I don't know if, as I said, you and the listeners, we could try and get together and say, okay, what's the best alternative for Google Reader that we can also use on an Android and on an iOS phone and ease the pain for everyone. Anyway, Mike, great show as usual. Keep up the work. And yeah, this is Brian out from the UK. Bye-bye.
Brian, you are spot on with this. And I am asking everybody, and this came up in the pre-show chat, we need good alternatives to Google Reader, and we want one that is cross-platform, preferably, one that'll work with Windows, Mac, Android, and iOS. Hit me with your favorites, and I will dedicate a portion of a show that will... or maybe even a whole show based on your recommendations, and let's find a good, solid replacement. What are you going to do? What are you using to aggregate your feeds since Google Reader's going away? This is perfect. Great question. Thank you so much, Brian, for taking the time to put that voicemail together. I really appreciate it. And there are a lot of listeners out there that are in the same boat that we want to know. What is a good replacement out there? And I'll put together all those suggestions and recommendations. Hey, if you can even review it, send me an email, write it out. If you don't feel like recording a voicemail, or, you know, call me, leave me a voicemail on my phone number and I will play it. Or take the time, record an MP3, attach it to email, send it to miketechshow@gmail.com. The final voicemail, give a listen. This is from Kate, and it's about antivirus, and we're going to talk about this.
Hello, Mike. It's Kate Stir, Kate Eels, up here in Kelowna, BC, in Canada. We share a respect for Microsoft Security Essentials and Avast when it comes to free antivirus products. And I just wanted to check in with you on Avast and let you know they've done just a major overhaul and released a new version, which is version 8. It's now more Windows 8-ish looking, but I don't think it runs as a native 8 app yet, Metro app, whatever they're calling it these days. But it's still a really nice, clean, easy to understand GUI. It's really uncluttered, and even my little old lady home customers can get their heads around it. I've been recommending Avast free more and more often now instead of Microsoft Security Essentials when it comes to a lot of my customers. The main reason why is because one thing that Microsoft Security Essentials has always disappointed me about is that it's just not smart enough to know when you've missed a scan that it needs to run a scan. So if you have your computer off at the time that the scan is supposed to run, Avast, like a lot of other antiviruses, you can configure it to run a scan when your computer starts up again. And I've never been able to figure out how to do that in MSE. It'll turn orange or it'll turn red, but it won't get on with running that scan. It just won't do it until you tell it to. And I do like that about Avast. It'll just get on with it. It also handles exceptions pretty well. Like on my main PC, I have a directory called Tools. And in that directory, I have a bunch of stuff from Nearsoft that's password crackers and things like that. Well, Avast thinks that those are hacker tools, and indeed they are, but it has no way of knowing that I'm using them for good and not for evil. Unless I exclude each of those files. But here's what I've done. I've just told it to exclude the directory called ctools, and then it just goes on with its scan. And then you can exclude a whole drive. Like I have a backup drive called E. I just exclude that, and it just scans everything else except E and my tools. Now, what I really, really like about it, this new version includes that toolbar cleaner. I think you talked about it a couple of weeks ago. You can get it as a standalone, and I have the portable version on my little USB sticks that I take with me to customers. But it's actually built in to the new version of Avast. being a little cautious with it. I think they maybe need to work on it a little bit. If you want to remove all the toolbars, it'll definitely do that for you. I had a little trouble trying to remove one, but not another one. Might have just been me. Overall, it's a really good tool, and the standalone version did the same thing. So I'm assuming it's the same tool. The other thing that's really cool is it has a software notifier. So it will notify my customers when there's a Java update, when Adobe Flash Player needs to update. So not every freaking piece of software on earth, but the ones that are popular and can expose you to exploits. It just puts up a little notification that says, hey, do you want me to do this? And I believe that there's a box you can check that will just do it automatically. So I haven't gone that far yet. As far as working with customers and setting up computers and doing maintenance, I'll still rely on Nynite to do that. But in between, I think this is a really nice solution. It's also pretty light on resources when it comes to scanning, and like I say, it's pretty easy to configure. A couple of downsides, or just, let's just say, cautions. It is a little verbose, and it does want to pop up a box when it says system scanning and when it gives you the scan results. Now, I don't actually mind that, but some people do. And it's easy to dismiss those boxes by just clicking the little X in the right-hand corner of them. I suppose there's a way to not make them pop up at all, but for most of my customers, I want them popping up. And I want them popping up for me, too. The other thing is it has a voiceover feature with a woman's voice who must be the sister of the Lexmark printer voiceover. I recommend turning that off. And in fact, it's easy to do. The really annoying thing, though, is you have to do a custom installation, and you have to choose custom installation like 3 times during the installation in order to get the free product without Google Chrome installing and making itself your default browser, or without somehow now Google Drive wants to install. So it takes, you really need to have had coffee before you do it. You can't just keep clicking OK, 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 and expect not to get a bunch of crap. I really hate that, but I really like the product, pardon me, more than I really hate that, so I have to recommend it. I'll send you some links along with the audio file here that will point to Avast and some information about it. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Thanks, Kate. And to back up Kate's recommendation, and I've always would go to Avast if I didn't use Microsoft Security Essentials. Very interesting, very timely. My latest issue of Maximum PC, I get on my Kindle, and I'm reading this from my iPad. Literally yesterday, I got the April version. They have a comparison of antiviruses. Let me tell you what they think of Avast. They rate it an 8 out of 10. For some, a paid security suite is a luxury that just doesn't fit within the budget. Luckily, there are programs like Avast you can enlist as your PC's personal bodyguard for nothing in return. Well, that's not entirely true. Avast requires a modicum of system resources to work its mojo. And though it's free to install, Avast frequently tries to sway you into purchasing additional protection. It starts during the installation scheme, and again, you're encouraged to upgrade to a paid package when you fill out the registration form, which you have to do within 30 days for it to continue working. On top of all that, there's a persistent banner ad integrated into Avast's main menu. Should you remain steadfast in your conviction to save your money, you won't be the worse for wear, since the free version takes security just as seriously as its paid brethren. The level of fine-grained control is almost dizzying, And one setting we recommend checking right off the bat is to scan for potentially unwanted programs. Avast usually scores high marks from independent testing labs, and we can see why. It's very good at sniffing out hidden dangers. And when we were finished stepping on virtual landmines, Avast mitigated the damage, leaving just a few harmless remnants behind. Only Norton blocked more malware. Avast automatically shoves suspicious programs into a sandbox, thereby isolating them from the OS. Unfortunately, you can't invoke the sandbox at will, nor will you find a firewall or anti-spam controls, features that are reserved for the pro version. Unique to Avast is a remote assistance tool. If you or your parents run into a jam, you can share a special code with another Avast user to open up a remote support session similar to programs like Log Me In. Nifty. Now, this is Avast free antivirus version 7. Kate was talking about 8. So at the time when they were reviewing here, 8 probably wasn't out. So this is what they recommended. They gave a rating of 6 for Microsoft Security Essentials. And this is what I use and I recommend. Here's what they say. Move along, Windows 8 users. There's nothing for you to see here. Windows 8 already has its own built-in antivirus solution called Windows Defender, which acts more like MSE than like Windows Defender, an older version of Windows, Microsoft claims. If you're rocking Windows 7 or earlier, MSE offers more robust protection than Windows Defender, and it's free to boot. But it also somewhat limited in scope compared to its freebie competitors. There are just a handful of settings to play with, such as enabling, disabling real-time protection and setting up file type exclusions. You can also schedule an automatic scan and optionally allocate CPU usage from 10 to 100% in 10% increments. 50% is the default setting. Beyond these controls, micromanagers will quickly grow bored. MSE wielded one of the lowest system footprints of all the antivirus solutions we tested. It had virtually no impact on PC Mark and only added a few seconds to our 6-gig file transfer test. That's impressive. But lest Microsoft pull a muscle, patting itself on the back, MSE scan engine ran abysmally slow in our test. It took over an hour to sweep our hard drive, more than twice as long as the next slowest contender. And even a subsequent scan took a comparatively lengthy 25 minutes to complete. Let me interject here. I don't care if a scan takes too long because I'm setting that for my clients to be done in the middle of the night when they're not using their computer. So if it's going to take a long time, so what? It's free and it's not in our face annoying. So keep that in mind. So the scan engine is slow, but is it methodical? That's a bit harder to assess. MSE was recently criticized for failure to receive certification from av-test.org, though Microsoft contends that 0.0033% of MSE users were impacted by malware samples not detected during the test. Other labs rate MSE favorably, though in our own test, MSE was average, blocking most dirty downloads, but also letting a few malicious programs write to the registry. MSE passes muster for low-risk users, but there are better AV solutions, and of course, they like Avast. My recommendation is always a tiered approach to security, and I'm going to repeat this again, and a lot of you who listen to all the shows, you've heard me say this before. I not only like Microsoft Security Essentials, I believe you should also have Malwarebytes Pro, and I'm going to have a link to that in the show. I am an affiliate. So please, I like Malwarebytes Pro. It works great. And then also Web of Trust installed on every browser. now you've really kind of tiered your approach in protecting your system. And that's the way to approach security, in layers. That's how I look at this. Now, who does Maximum PC like? They give a rating of 10 for Norton Internet Security. I was shocked that they got the highest rating from Maximum PC. I am not a fan of Norton. I believe it sucks up the CPU. They like it. They like this latest version of Norton and gave it a 10. But, you know, you're going to pay for it. And it's not free. And you're going to pay, they list here, $80 for 3 PCs for 1 year. Okay, that, you know, that's not too bad. But I've always found Norton always getting in the way of me trying to use the computer and slowing the computer down. Any client that I've ran into. Now, I got to admit, I have not put the latest version to its paces, nor am I going to. I will still stand put with my recommendations of MSE. If you want something a little beefier, but you're going to get some annoying ads that you got to put up with, then go to Avast, which clearly does a better job and has finer controls for you. So if you want to, you know, micromanage your antivirus tweaking and checking, go to Avast. So I think we got some really good recommendations here and that back up our recommendations for Avast and Microsoft Security Essentials. I have 3 emails. I have a lot more than 3, but I just picked 3 that I'm going to continue with one more topic, which is a follow-up to the Square service that I talked about that I just purchased for taking credit cards. Give a listen to this email. This is from Mike, because I asked for your responses, and I got great responses. I have used the Square payments for 2 years now. Last year, we processed about $14,000. Most payments were anywhere between $80 and $1,500, and we have never had any issues or hold on money. The money ends up in my account within 2 days, and my customers love it because they get to use their fingers to sign. Once you process over a certain amount, the limits are lifted. The limits are in place to protect Square for chargebacks and fraudulent use of cards by identity thieves. This service works with our smaller clients and on-site payment for home customers and new business. I have gotten in trouble before with bad checks from some of these clients, and having them use a credit card or debit card assures me of my money, and I only have to lose 2.7% instead of $35. Now, with that said, we also have a merchant account that we use to process our monthly contract and when we are paid for large purchases such as servers. The account cost us about $15 per month plus processing fees for each card we process. Our effective rate to process with these monthly fees is right about 1.5 to 2.2% of sales, much cheaper than the Square at this time. You have to be careful when signing up for merchant accounts, and the bank is the worst place to go as they charge the highest processing rates because they have a captive audience. If you need a merchant account, I would tell you to go to many different merchant processors. There are many local processors that will charge less and give better customer service. I found my processor through my BNI group. They were way cheaper than the bank. Couple of things to remember. If you do get a merchant account, I never, never, never rent or lease the equipment from the company. In the long run, it is better to own the machines. You can find them on eBay, or the provider may have machines to sell you. The more reputable people will have machines to sell you. Do not pay more than $150 for those machines. Remember, all the fees and rates are negotiable, so ask for the lowest rate. Other place you can go if you need a merchant account other than the bank is Costco, Sam's Club, and QuickBooks. With all this said, my advice is this. If you are not processing a minimum of $1,200 per month, you do not need a merchant account, and you are better off with Square payments. If you are doing more than that, then you need to move to a merchant account, as you will save over 1 to 1.5% in processing fees. Hope this helps, as I have already jumped through all of the hoops and made the mistake of getting a merchant account too soon and struggled with all the extra fees. I am lucky now that my volume has increased to cover the cost and it no longer is an issue. Yes, thanks to the Mike Tech Show, my business has become healthy because of the information contained in each podcast. I am of the opinion that having multiple ways of customers being able to pay you is not a bad idea, as long as there are no upfront fees. In this economy, getting paid as quickly as you can is the way to go. Always look at the small print for any payment systems, as fees are always hidden. Good luck. And this is Mike from South Florida, computer specialist. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to let me know not only your feedback on Square, but your great recommendations in signing up and some of the ins and outs of getting a merchant account, because I've had that discussion with my bank and their fees were just way too high and I'm not doing any volume. So for me, it looks like Square is perfect for that occasional credit card that you want to be able to take it if someone offers. And I have only had one bounced check. I am very, very fortunate. But then again, I don't have a retail location where anybody that I'm dealing with is a regular customer or longtime customer or knows someone that I know. So I'm not dealing with strangers that much that are going to hit me up with a bad check and abandon it. But you're right. You have a bounced check, you get hit with a $35 fee. And it gets ugly. And that's something that if I do run into that, I am passing those fees back on to my customer. They have to pay for their mistakes. I just wanted to comment on the Square service. I use them since they started, and you are right about support. They don't have any, but I haven't needed to contact them yet because they are very prompt on their payment, usually 1 to 2 business days. What I like about the service is there's no extra monthly fees, or if I don't use it a while, I don't get charged. Also, my customers love that I can take any credit card. Raul, thank you very much. This is from Josh. I use Square to process payments and also have been using PhoneSwipe, which charges a lower 2.69% and works great. The only issue I have had with Square is that the reader doesn't always want to read the card and you have to swipe it several times. Hope this helps. Thanks for the show. Josh, thank you so much for your feedback. I really appreciate it. With that, I am going to play some music. This Sunday, my wife and I were attending the Pink concert in Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo Center. So I thought, well, I'll play some Pink. And give a listen to this. This is a song that she closes on her current tour right now. This is the final song in the concert, and it's Glitter in the Air. And this is from her CD Funhouse. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Have you ever fed a lover with just your hands? Close your eyes and trust it, just trust it. Have you ever thrown a fistful of glitter in the air? Have you ever looked fear in the face and said, I just don't care? And it's only 1:30, the point of no return, the tip of the iceberg, the sun before the burn, the thunder before the lightning, and the breath before the phrase. Have you ever felt this way? Have you ever hated yourself for staring at the phone? Your whole life waiting on the ring to prove you're not alone. Have you ever been touched so gently you had to cry? Have you ever invited a stranger to come inside? It's only half past the point of oblivion. The hourglass on the table, the walk before the run, the breath before the kiss, and the fear before the phrase. Have you ever felt this way? That rope tight. Have you ever held your breath and asked yourself, will it ever get better than tonight?
That is Pink, who is from the Philadelphia area, and can't wait to see her on Sunday night. And the song is Glitter in the Air, and I'll have links to where you can purchase all of her great music from Amazon.com. I want to thank all of you for downloading and staying subscribed to the show and spreading the word for the Mike Tech Show. Your support, I so appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so very, very much. And I will be back next week, same time, same channel. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.